The Daily Buzz is made possible with support from Studio Movie Grill, opening hearts and minds one story at a time. A trip to SMG is unlike any other entertainment experience. Whether you come early or stay late, we'll set the mood for a great night to socialize and connect with an immersive movie-going experience. And independent filmmakers, you can four-wall your film or find a home at the many film festivals they host in their 30 locations across the country. And Onward, a search-driven brand experience agency. In today's heads-down society, people crave relevance, emotional connection, and honest information. Our pioneering search-first process delivers the credible insights for informed marketing communications.
You're listening to The Daily Buzz on KCPW.org, MovieCityNews.com, and You Offend Me, You Offend My Family. My name is Mindy Chang, and we're on location in Park City, Utah, at the 2018 Sundance Film Festival. We're coming to you from Slam Dance headquarters on historic Main Street, interviewing some of this year's most important and exciting voices in the independent film world. Joining me this morning are my co-hosts John Wildman and Lancia Wan. Today we are talking to Iris Ng and Claudia Roschka about their work as female cinematographers on the film Nuka and RBG. We speak with producer and editor Taryn Gould from Narcissister, a Sundance New Frontier film featuring the performance artists of the same name, and also Jonathan and Ilan Bogarin, a sibling production team that uncovers a treasure of wonders from their grandmother's home in their first documentary to premiere in the Sundance Next category, 306 Hollywood. Finally, we chat with John M. Chu, director of the upcoming film Crazy Rich Asians from the 14th annual APA Filmmakers Experience in Park City.
You're listening to The Daily Buzz. My name is John Wildman, and right now we're going to have a segment talking about women in cinematography, which is very appropriate that we're taping this segment right now because they've just announced the Oscars this morning, and I believe the first time a female cinematographer has been nominated for an Oscar happened, which is Rachel Morrison from the film Mudbound. We're going to talk about two films that are screening here up in Park City. And we have with us Iris Ng, who's a cinematographer of the short film Nuka, and Claudia Roschka, who's a cinematographer for RBG, a documentary that's playing at Sundance. So welcome, both of you.
Hello.
Thank you.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having
us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was very happy to do this segment because I talked to a lot of directors and a lot of female directors, and oftentimes the subject comes up as far as who they're hiring for their DPs, and whether or not they're going to have female DPs work with them. And more often than not, of course, they are very eager to do that. But the reasoning is not just the obvious, well, I want to have another woman by my side, but oftentimes, which I think is fantastic, it more often than not goes to the project they're working on and the type of perspective that they really want. And I wanted to start off to have both of you talk about the perspective that you bring, not just the technical, not just choosing lenses and working with lighting, but the perspective that you bring to your work behind the camera. So Claudia, let's start with you.
Well, when directors approach me with their projects, very often it just starts off with a creative conversation, and that is not gender-based. And so the conversation usually circles around the different characters, if situations are very sensitive, what kind of story and dynamic we're trying to capture, and the, you know, really focusing on the authenticity of the moment. And so during that conversation, it becomes very clear to me of what tools I would want to use and how I would approach it, and it becomes this dialogue. And within usually the first half hour, the directors say, like, yes, this is exactly what I'm thinking. You know, I think we'll make a great team. And then we move on to, negotiation about budget and, you know, what I'll have available in terms of tools. So I don't really experience at that point any kind of competition or any kind of segregation between, oh, this is what a man would say or this is what a woman would say. But it's really just on a one-to-one base of, how do you see this project? What is the aim? How do you want, as a director, to present it? How can I, as a cinematographer, really support the subtext context in each scene, what can I bring to the table? And that is really, you know, my personal perspective as an artist, as a storyteller. And, you know, everybody is unique that way.
And Iris, your thoughts?
I think there's such a range of reasons why people want to work with anybody. And I think in my experience, sometimes it is about logistical reasons, where it is sort of a gendered conversation. But other times it goes beyond that. And it's more about, as you say, Claudia, the more specific reasons and needs of the story or the situation, especially in documentaries, right? And I think in either case, that all gets, we move beyond that.
It kind of falls by the wayside?
Yes, by the end of it, because we learn more about each other. I think, and the reasons and your strengths sort of come out in that process. Generally speaking, I think every individual is different anyway, and we all have assets and advantages and disadvantages for any given situation. But
well, you know, now both of you. I mean, you're working in a documentary, so you know. I think there's a slight difference. I think as a filmmaker working narrative, shooting narrative versus documentary, and I think issues of female gaze versus male gaze come into play or could come and be utilized there. But I really want. I also wanted to hear you both talk about on the projects that you have here. The approach that you brought, on Fornuka, you know, you're shooting oil fields. You're out in was it North Dakota, right?
Yes, I should say that I also shot the modern footage in Shirkers as well.
Oh, okay, all right.
Anyway,
all right, and then RBG, of course, about Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and the approach there. But let's start with Nuka, and let's talk about the hardcore aspects of being on the set and capturing the footage that you needed to shoot there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for that film, there was being with young female subjects who had to be interviewed, not on camera, but who we had to gain the trust of. And I think that has more to do with Michelle Latimer, who's an Algonquin Métis filmmaker, mm-hmm. and being able to be in that community and to be trusted. And so being part of that is just an extension of that. And the work on that was more about landscape and trying to make that connection between these two types of exploitation that the film talks about. And,
right.
And I'm not sure how the gaze plays into it other than we were trying to channel the land.
Right.
And,
right.
And what was happening to it, and relate it to women as well.
And we don't have a lot of time, but also, you know, Claudia, shooting this documentary on Ruth Bader Ginsburg, can you talk about, the challenges therein from your perspective?
Well, first of all, it was an incredible experience being able to capture her nature, and also we had a full women team. And we chose that on purpose, just because Ruth, of course, represents, the fight for equal rights for women and has done so much. And so, having a team that comprised of two fabulous directors, Betsy West and Julie Cohen, and adding myself into the mix, we're very established women in our field and certainly represent leadership that way. And so we felt, we had suffered two similar circumstances where we were facing, or especially for me as a cinematographer, facing the odds of, right now the statistics just came out in January that still 96% of the films shot overall are, shot by men, and 4% are shot by women. And look, I've been in the feature film business for 10 years before I switched over to feature documentaries, and I certainly never, during the time when I was shooting feature films, worked with any woman in the helm. But with Ruth, it was really a tricky situation because from the get-go, we knew she was, we had very limited amount of time with her, and we wanted her to look as glorious and, you know, vital and, you know, energetic as possible. And so beauty was a big issue. It's like, how do you make somebody look really glamorous and strong when you're photographing her, especially when she has very sensitive eyes? So overlighting her or lighting in a certain way had to kind of be defined. And so it was my challenge, because this documentary is based on a lot of her friends and colleagues really describing, you know, their interactions with her. So it was kind of like a trickle-down. I wanted to establish a lighting situation where she felt vulnerable, where she was not impacted by glaring lights, but where, you know, her inner beauty and her radiance really would come true. But it kind of defined everything else because of her. So it was like a trickle-down. Mm-hmm. You establish a certain idea and approach for her, and then it would affect everybody else. And so what we came up with was really an idea of showing a tremendous intimacy, having vulnerable lighting where skin tone just was glamorous, at the same time have a high contrast so that people would really feel strong, you know, in their position of whatever location, whatever, you know.
Right. Well, it's great. You know, one of the special things that we've done on this show since its inception and creation by the great Irene Cho is to shine a light on people behind the camera, and in this case, the women behind the camera. Again, we've been talking with Iris Ng, the cinematographer from Nuka, and Claudia Raschke, the cinematographer of RBG. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you
so much for having us.
Welcome back to The Daily Buzz. This is John Wildman, and right now we're going to talk about Narcissistor Organ Player, which is in the New Frontier section at Sundance, and we have with us Taryn Gould, who is the editor and producer on the project. And normally I would say a film. This is kind of a film, but it's a little bit more than that. It's also a performance piece. There's a lot going on here, and I'm actually really happy that I've got the editor who had to try to figure out how to make something. To kind of introduce us not to to this fascinating performance character, Narcissistor, but to also create a story there. Mm-hmm. So let me really quickly say that, you know, it's about Narcissistor, who's a performance artist, and on the personal level, the film investigates how her complex family history compelled to create this persona, and it's. Who is also very much a mystery, very much a, you know, because the number of masks and,
yes.
and wardrobe changes, and it's just like nothing I've ever seen before. So let's talk about how something is made out of this.
It was a really complex process, especially when you have a subject that is directing that's a really difficult. But ultimately, if you pull it off, satisfying challenge. And while she was commissioned in 2011, actually, to make a evening-length theater piece, which became Organ Player by Abrams Art Center in New York. And then she applied for a creative capital grant in about 4 years ago, 2014, and she turned... It was a grant to try and turn that work into a film, because it turned out that her mother ended up passing away in the kind of 6 months around when she was creating The Organ Player. So she was consciously and unconsciously kind of being affected by the grieving process of losing her mother, and she had a very, very deep relationship with her mother. So the film was going to be an attempt to unpack that and to sort of explore the effects not only of the loss but on the life of her mother, and then tracing that and expanding it to her larger family.
Well, everything, you get the sense of control with her. It's control with her image, control with persona, control with the message she's trying to put out there. And you know, and there's also the other part that's fascinating is how she is utilizing sexual imagery, you know, within this. And you know, and I have a performance artist friend who has a giant vagina costume that she, but this goes beyond
completely anatomically correct.
Well, also, beyond this
of an upside down vagina, which is just kind of mind blowing. But yeah, her work is the erotics in her work are very radical. There's a lot of it's very, very provocative. It makes you think a lot about, I mean, femininity and identity, and it was such an exciting opportunity to try and take that work and just create a film around it that would almost force people to see beyond the erotics, because there's many, many layers, and it's actually, in my opinion, quite brilliant work that really kind of sticks in your mind. You might see it and it makes you uncomfortable and it might be sort of absurd, and then it sort of sticks in your mind for a while. But especially for people that would not be inclined to look deeper or think about it more, this story created an environment for that work where you can... The work is sort of sitting in this very elemental arc of like family, love, and trauma that's completely universal, and so it's expanding both.
Right. Well, and also I think you do very well in this. Everyone concerned in bringing in that personal history and that personal connection, which really then colors and informs her art.
Absolutely.
But as a producer, you know, how was that? You know, how was managing that?
Well, you know, as Narcissister was working on the project for many years, and I was actually the third editor that came on, and it became clear right away. We really, you know, in a way, reimagined how to integrate this family story. We got access to videotaped interviews and home videos that her brother had shot during this period right before a very big and scary surgery that her mother had. And he started interviewing her, and those tapes were completely instrumental. And it was a process to get her brother to sort of be ready to give them to her. And you know, to just unearth it. And it's a lot of just grief in a way. You have to be emotionally prepared to reopen those things. And so, yeah, when we were in the edit, it was a very small team. It was really her and I that were in the edit and just integrating this archival material. It was a really exciting process to figure out that, you know, her hands are very much a big part of her work, and how to make a documentary that was representative of her output as an artist. So it's a process to figure out how to present these images in a way, and she moves them around with her own hands. And she's a very unprecious and brave artist. And that was, I guess my job was to, like most editors, it was kind of a psychologist simultaneously as a support system. Also, right, as someone was really diving in and making real-time connections and discoveries that were at times painful, understanding both her family and her work and how those things intersect.
Many an editor have held the psyche together with many a director. Again, the title is Narcissus Organ Player in the New Frontier section at Sundance. It really is something to see and something like you've never seen. We've been talking to Taryn Gould, who's the editor and producer on the project. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Welcome back to The Daily Buzz. I'm your host, Minji Chang, joined by my co-host, Lancia Wan. We are here with the co-directors of 306 Hollywood, which is a world premiere at Sundance Film Festival in the next category. We have co-directors Elan and Jonathan Bogarin. Welcome to The Daily Buzz.
Thank you so much for having us. A pleasure to be here.
Thanks. It's wonderful.
And this is a fantastic, magical, realist documentary, and that's, you know, the soundbite version, but I would love to hear from you two about this film.
Yeah, we are so excited to be here, and we are just amazingly excited that we're the first documentary to ever premiere in the next section. And it is, in fact, a magical realist documentary.
And what the film does is it sort of it follows our journey as we excavate our grandmother's house after she passes away. She had lived in the same house for about 70 years. And once she died, we had this decision we had to make. We said, okay, there's all this stuff here. She's been collecting things for 70 years. She lived here forever. But what do we do with it? So we decided to take a sort of strange approach, and we transformed her house into an archaeological excavation. And over the course of 6 years, we used the language of mythology, of fairy tales, and magical realism to transform this journey of losing someone into something that is a journey of transformation, a journey of growth, and, you know, also a journey of letting go as well.
And really commemorating this wonderful, wonderful woman.
I was reading, and it said that inspiration was taken from Wes Anderson as well as Agnes Varda.
Those are two of our big influences. Yeah, I mean, we actually, we're both also visual artists. So our influences come everywhere from like ancient Roman art to Catholic art in churches from the Renaissance to contemporary photography, installation art. There's really a huge range of influences that we bring into the film.
Right, and a RISD graduate, NYU graduate. And Ilana, this is your probably second time at Sundance, I believe, from big fans. So from this comedy to a documentary, how do you make that leap? Like, how does that go?
I mean, it's just amazing to get to work on interesting projects. So, you know, Big Fan was my first feature that I produced. Mm-hmm. And it was just an amazing adventure to deal with something that was a comedy, but in fact also this sort of very hardened, you know, heavy emotional experience.
Yeah.
You know, Big Fan really dives into a psyche. And, you know, we really got to combine sort of this adventure of sports with, you know, an emotional, really specific character. And, you know, again, same thing with our grandmother. She's sort of an unlikely film character. And, you know, we wanted to sort of look at a different type of person than put them in film, give them a voice, rethink of how we look at an older woman, you know, and give her the chance to reflect on life and give her a voice.
Right.
And I think also just to touch on that is that, you know, 306 Hollywood is funny.
Yeah,
grandma's really funny.
I learned so much from your grandmother. She is a wise woman.
Right. Yeah, and mm-hmm. from the experiences of Wes Anderson movies, kind of that comedic fast pace, but with very serious notes put into the underlying part of the story.
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, we really wanted to bring together as many different elements as possible. So for us, like, there's a term in Yiddish called laughing with yashikas, which means laughing with thorns in your side.
Ah.
So it's like, we want people to cry and laugh at the same movie, sometimes in the same scene.
Laugh so hard it hurts.
Yeah. Exactly.
Nice. That's awesome.
So go ahead.
But as you're saying, it's like the idea of mixing that pacing, a stylish approach to something. Our goal was to elevate the ordinary to the extraordinary. And the way to do that is to basically combine all of these influences, these grand influences, and put them into something that would be, you know, like all of our stories, all of our families, all of us have a house that we grew up in, you know. And I think that that was really our goal of sort of putting the ordinary and the extraordinary into one.
I think you really accomplished that through this very, I mean, I personally have never seen a documentary like this before in my life, and I hope to see more work from both of you, and I think it'll be an amazing inspiration to kind of push boundaries in how we do these storytelling endeavors, and the things that you did with color, and the things that you did with having the model
scale model
of the house
category, even as a documentary.
It's yeah.
like just the way that it was filmed, the amazing, like, almost surrealism to it makes it a perfect match for Next. And it was also sort of partly funded by the Sundance Institute Documentary Fund, correct?
Yeah. We're so lucky to have their support. And so they came on, we got a grant from them, and we have just an unbelievable group of investors who have come on, especially Chicago Media Project they've changed our lives. They are wondrous people. And yeah, they have been a blessing.
Right. Yeah, I think also to touch on your point about what this film feels like, you know, we set out with this idea to make a nonfiction film in which everything is in fact nonfiction, but we wanted everyone who is in the film to appear as if they were a character on a journey. So all of our interviewees, they appear like apparitions in a fairy tale. They appear sort of in the model house on a tiny television. Like, they'll kind of like, even there's a point where we go to a library in Rome, and it's you know, we're interviewing a real librarian. This is the real story of the library. However, it feels as if it's a parable of letting go. So we really tried as hard as possible to make the whole thing feel as if you are in what you would think would be a fiction film, but it's not even hybrid. It's actually all real.
And I think there's a really beautiful I didn't catch on to it yet because I feel like I'm just immersed in this world. And, you know, you can't step out and realize what's happening as your vision as filmmakers. But there are also characters where you brought people to lip sync back as actors, right? So there was a casting process to this as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We had a casting process for both our dancers and our actors.
Yeah.
So with our actors, we found a tape from the 1970s, from 1972, that our mother had recorded of our family. And we had no idea this existed. And we have, you know, we turned it on. We're like, oh, my God, our family's crazy. And here they are. And we're like, but wait a minute. This is the most tangible thing that takes us back in time. And it brings them back to life, literally. You hear their voices. And for us, we were still in the same house. So we brought actors in and we dressed them in the exact same clothing that our family, our family's clothing, in the exact same spaces. And that's where we had them lip sync to the audio.
We even filmed those scenes with Super Baltar lenses, which are the vintage lenses they shot The Godfather on.
Love
so
it.
All the films from that period were shot on these lenses. So we even used the techniques to bring everything back to life.
Exactly. So everything was real. But the people.
And which made it real.
Exactly. Which makes it even more real.
And this is the first feature that you've directed. In the past, you've been mostly a producer. And this is kind of the first feature you've worked on in general.
Yeah, so I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, my background is in visual art. Mm-hmm. And then actually about 7 years ago, Alana and I, we started up a production company called El Tigre Productions. And we do video content and strategy for some of the top museums in the world. So the MoMA, the Getty, the Whitney. And we also work internationally because we're a bilingual production company, English and Spanish. So we've been sort of like honing our skills and like, you know, learning about filmmaking, learning all the different skills. We do everything. So we edit, we write, we direct, we shoot. So it's kind of like everything all under one roof.
It's fantastic.
And, and
great
that kind
way
of
to
led,
springboard.
Yeah, led into the feature.
Well, it's no surprise that your first feature ever is now at Sundance Film Festival in the next category.
Breaking
barriers of all kinds. So thank you so much for this wonderful project and congratulations, because it's amazing. It's a wonderful film. I hope that everyone gets a chance to see it at Sundance Film Festival in the world premiere of 306 Hollywood in the next category. And we are here with Ilan Bogarin and her brother and co-director Jonathan Bogarin. This has been fantastic. Thanks you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Hi, this is Minji Chang with The Daily Buzz. I'm here at the 14th annual Asian Pacific American Filmmakers Experience at Park City. I'm so excited because I'm sitting down with director John M. Chu of the upcoming feature film Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm good. It's good to be here in Utah and here in the cold.
Yeah.
Very different than LA, but it's great.
We're so grateful you could come out. You came out just for this event.
Yeah.
Yes. How are you feeling? Like, you have a really big year coming up ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
What's been going through your mind as like kind of the focus groups you know, things are coming together with the film? What's been on your mind as a creator?
Well, it's been a crazy year, so I'm still recovering from 2017. I had a baby,
yes,
shot the movie. So it's been a wild ride, and now I'm excited for the world to see the movie. We've previewed it a couple times to some smaller audiences, and the reaction has been off the charts. It's been so much fun. Makes me really proud of the movie. We have an amazing cast from Constance Wu to Awkwafina.
That ensemble cast is out of this world.
Insane. Henry Golding, who's new, but everyone's going to love this guy.
And Gemma Chan, who's lovely.
Legendary Michelle Yeoh. Like,
goddess.
Everyone is on fire. And even like someone like Ronnie playing Eddie, you know, they have specific scenes that they're in and they just pop. Jimmy O Yang.
Yes.
Like, everybody is really great. So
awesome.
I just can't wait for the world to witness it.
Awesome. And we're so excited for you. And, you know, the diversity conversation, you know, we've been embedded in that conversation for many, many years, but it's kind of taken steam over the last year or two. How are you feeling about that conversation? You know, I think you're one of the few Asian American creators who are really doing things of this magnitude in Hollywood and on a global scale. Mm-hmm. Right. So how are you feeling about that?
Well, one, we couldn't be doing what we're doing without everybody paving the way before us, and everyone, and currently actually even, the support has been amazing. Like, you know, there's one thing where people are like, oh, we're going to come out and see and support you, whatever you need. It's another thing when actually they show up.
Yes.
And they're like, we're here to work. What do you need from us? What can we do? It is amazing to see all the different organizations, all the different people who've been doing this for years, paving the way, and they're not tired. It's amazing.
Well, I mean, you're
it's been
giving
a long
us fuel.
Road. So that is very encouraging to me. And then I've seen the other side, this younger talent that has not been given the opportunities to show off what they can do, have not been given the parts that they can show off to the world, who we are and what we're about, and all shapes, sizes, colors, ages, all that stuff. And so I've seen them, and they're ready, and they're prime. And so it's about getting filmmakers to write stories, executives to get those stories funded and out there, and distributors, and then the audience to go out there and support it. So I'm so excited because I see all the parts in place. Now we need it to be executed. All the great ideas actually need to happen now. So
absolutely, we're very honored and excited to have you here, and all the work that you're doing and have coming up ahead of you. And so we have just a lot of things to look forward to.
Yes,
and we're gonna get moving on this event. So this is Minji Chang signing off for the Daily Buzz here at the APA Filmmakers Experience 2018 in Park City. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
And we're wrapping up the Daily Buzz on kcpw.org, moviecitynews.com, and You Offend Me, You Offend My Family. This show is made possible with the support of KCPW and Slamdance Film Festival. Our sponsor, Studio Movie Grill, which is opening hearts and minds one story at a time, and Onward, a search-driven brand experience agency. Additional support is provided by Movie City News, The Market in Park City, Ruby Snap, and City Cakes. Our producer is Lancia Wan.